Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
So there's a lot going on in the state legislature as well. We are now 21 days away from the proposed constitutional convention as laid out in HB 800. You've heard me say that any of the folks that represent me that vote for HB 800, I will not be voting for them. And that's how strongly I feel about this, because we have not done our due diligence. And here we are 21 days out, and guess what is missing? An agenda, which is basically an expression of where the administration wants to be on this issue. So we continue to play hide the ball with everyone, including legislators. Like, the bill went before the House Appropriation Committee yesterday. There were two from Jefferson Parish on that committee. One voted yes to move HB 800. Timothy Kerner, I would suggest that you call him. He voted yes. Rodney Lyons voted no. Both West Bank representatives. Kind of curious. What are you voting on? The only thing that has happened thus far is House Governmental and Affairs met for 3 or 4 days, and the outcome was Article 1, 2, 3, and 4 of the Constitution will not be meddled with at all. And those fell underneath the construct of House Governmental and Affairs. And now we're on everything else, judiciary, appropriations, education, all very important issues. One would think that we would have an agenda 21 days out and counting. Still no agenda. I was talking to some legislators the other day. They don't even know what committee this whole process is going to go to next. Some were surprised that it went to appropriation. So, I mean, you just cannot make this stuff up. It's obvious that we have not done the due diligence. We're kind of flying by the seat of our pants. We are just taking it a day at a time, trying to figure out where we are. They're probably still trying to pull votes together. That shouldn't be that difficult, because it looks like everyone on the Republican side of the aisle, for the most part, is just going to walk into this blindly and not really ask the probative, difficult questions as to how this is ultimately going to play out, and why can't we just know what issues and what the desires are of the administration as it relates to what they want to take out of the Constitution and put into revised statute. As a taxpaying citizen, I would love to know. I would love to know. I'd love to do the due diligence. I'd love to do the research. I'd love to gain a better understanding of what that means, what it looks like, whether or not that would be a super statute, one requiring 2/3 vote of the members of both House in order to change it once it would be voted by the public, if that's going to be the ballot call language that the type of statute that it would fall into would be a super statute requiring 2/3 vote in order to change it. I would feel better about it if that was the case, but I still don't feel good about this process, because you, me, and others have no role in the process at all. Everything in the Constitution was voted on by us, and it was there for a reason. And in some cases, a lot of these amendments were passed resoundingly. Votes that weren't even close. So it was clear the mood of the public and a desire to put it and protect it and amend the Constitution. Now, we've had a lot of messaging out of the administration of, you know, why would you want to be inconvenienced with these votes and this and that and reading this and doing that, and this is what you've elected us for, to take and bear all of that inconvenience. That's not necessarily true. Those are all smoke screens. Don't fall prey to that. Information is power. The more information you have, the better off you're going to be, the more control you'll have over your life. And a lot of these things are going to impact your life. Let's just take one example of going too fast. There was an article just this morning written by Patrick Wall over at NOLA.com. Headline, we're slowing it down. Louisiana Senate pumps brakes on Jeff Landry plan to fund private schools. Education savings account. Yesterday, Senator Rick Edmonds from Baton Rouge proposed a complete overhaul of the plan he sponsored, which would put tax dollars into education savings accounts that parents could spend on tuition. Instead of creating an ESA program, the revised Senate bill would require the state to first gather relevant information. Wow. Earth-shattering, right? Earth-shattering. How many times did pretty much everybody who's talked about this on radio, TV, otherwise, talked about the due diligence that you need to do before you embark upon a program of this nature, because it has a huge fiscal impact on the state of Louisiana. And when you talk to folks, the one thing that you recognize right off the bat is that no one had their head or their arms around the issue, and no one really knew what the fiscal note was going to ultimately be year to year to year. And this goes into a year where we know that we'll have a $500 to $700 million fiscal cliff. And we could potentially add over $200 million in costs by virtue of this program. So Senate President Cameron Henry says last week, we're slowing it down. We need a lot more information. Another revelation, right? Another revelation. They need relevant information and a lot more information. Two great points. Why they waited till now to bring them up is beyond me, but these are great points. We need more, and the more that we have, we have to make sure it's relevant so we can be in a better position to determine the efficacy of this program and what it will ultimately mean to public school education, what it means to private school education, and what it means to the budget of the state of Louisiana. And there's another comment that's made about, it's hard to take back these programs, right? Once you start these programs, it's very hard to pull them back, Cameron Henry told reporters earlier this month. So we want to make sure that we don't give someone false hope and then have to take that back. Yeah, that's one of the primary motivations in doing your appropriate due diligence, to gain an understanding as to whether or not this endeavor can support itself. Because if it can't, the public loses a lot of confidence. You create disruption in the educational stream of commerce by having a lot of money flow through one year and then a lot of money being taken out in the following year. That doesn't bode well for education. Nobody would want that. Everyone wants stability, a stable revenue source. It would be a disaster for an educational system that already finds itself pretty much at the bottom of everything. So it's otherwise a crapshoot because we've not done the due diligence. Why is that? There's an expression of impatience in this administration, of wanting to get a lot done right now, get it over with, get it behind us, consume the political capital necessary now. The public tends to forget three years down the road. This gets pretty butt ugly, and we can begin to craft our messaging in order to make it something that it's not, as opposed to taking a business approach, doing the due diligence before you make these investments. The irony is every one of these folks have worked in some kind of business somewhere, somehow, either their own or for somebody else. They wouldn't spend their own money in this fashion. They wouldn't approach this situation in this fashion if it was their own money that they were putting at risk. Why? Because it's just too damn risky. That's why. Plain and simple. They know it, and if they tell you something otherwise, they're lying. They know it's risky. They don't have their hands around this issue as to what the fiscal impact's going to be. But I can promise you this, if it was their money, they wouldn't be putting it at risk. They would take a much more conservative, deliberate approach. They would have studies. They would have experts. They would have a lot of different things. They'd have financial folks that would be opining on this issue. They would have all of those ducks in a row before they ever called upon a representative board, executive committee, or whatever in the private sector to do or make this decision. You know it. I know it. We all know it. Is it too much to ask for by us that they treat this money as though it's their own money? That they do those things on our behalf as the fiduciary to us? That's what they are. They're our fiduciary. We've elected them to be our fiduciary. I don't believe it's too much to ask for them to do the appropriate things. When you hear these statements now, when we're weeks down the road, 21 days out from this special session, if we get there, this bill is going to have to get through the process in rocket speed. Are we really going to have all that we need in order to accomplish it? The answer is obviously not. Because for them to come forward and make the comments and the statements that they're making now, they're recognizing that they don't. Now, one other thing that we know for sure is that there's no desire on any of their parts to consume political capital. And anytime you start to see the backstroking routine that's going on right now, that's what it's all about predominantly. People are saying, they're reading the polls, they're fielding your calls on these issues, which you should continue to call on the public records bill and HB 800 on constitutional convention, on this bill as well. Senate Bill 313 is the proposed overhaul, and the original bill is House Bill 745 that they're trying to overhaul with this bill on the Senate side. And let them know how you feel about it. This is about your kids. This is about the funding of their education. This is about their future. This is about a battle within. Now, there's some provisions I like about, you know, this bill and everything else. What I don't like is I don't believe that right now, if asked of this administration, let us see the plan. Show us a plan. Show us how it's going to work out. Show us the fiscal note. How is that going to get funded? Where are you going to draw this from? What's the impact going to be on the public school system? How many students do we anticipate moving from the public school to the private school or parochial sector? What is the capacity of those other alternative schools? And how many students, at best, can they take annually over the next 10 years? That's all relevant, valid information to gain an understanding as to how the public education system is going to be impacted here. and we start to look at it from a dollars and cents standpoint to see whether or not it makes any sense. We hear a lot from folks sometimes, well, this is how the process works. No, not really. If this is what you had in mind when you got elected in the first primary, you had more time to prepare your legislative agenda than any other governor, because most go through a second primary, you would have started working on these initiatives and laying out the game plan, the marketing plan, as to how you're going to market this, and having the answers to the questions that are the most obvious. And there's some that are out there that are so obvious it's scary, and what's really scary is we don't have an answer. So now we're slowing it down. So this is a great situation. It's emblematic of the problems with HB 800. This is what happens when you don't do your due diligence. You recognize, ooh, we bit off more than we can chew, which is pretty much what they're doing with HB 800. 21 days away, and we still don't have an agenda. We'll be right back with Arnie Philko. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We are seeing some very difficult situations play themselves out on college campuses across this country, where a number of protesters don't want to play by the rules, don't want to play by the policies, don't want to play by the law. They just don't find the hypocrisy in what they're doing and what they're complaining of as it relates to Israel. And it's just kind of interesting. And then when you ask them about from the river to the sea, they don't even know that there's actually a river and a sea. They can't name it. When you ask them about the definition of intifada, they don't know that either. They don't really know much of what they are actually protesting for. So many are beginning to ask the question, why are they protesting? What is this about? Is this just the rite of passage of disrupting everyone's lives on these college campuses? Are we just importing hate into this country? At some point, Tom, hopefully we'll get to some resolution and we can figure out exactly what's driving the dialogue and the rhetoric here and why we find ourselves in this situation where we have handcuffed ourselves and we're afraid to make decisions. Arnie Philko, former CEO of the Jewish Federation of Greater New Orleans, joins us to talk about this and other matters. Arnie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Newell. I appreciate being on. And I think you framed the issue perfectly just in the last minute as to what the real reason is behind these protests. I will tell you it's very disturbing, both as a member of the Jewish community, but just as an individual to see what's going on. I really wonder at times, is this really about, you know, Palestinian rights, or is this just hate towards Israel, hate toward Jewish people? Because, you know, I see these signs, you know, ceasefire. Well, do people realize that the terrorist group Hamas has rejected dozens and dozens of overtures where Israel has offered ceasefire? They don't want it, okay? In the last 24 hours, through the brokerage of Egypt and Qatar and others, there's a deal on the table right now for a ceasefire, not even for 6 weeks, but much longer than that, where Palestinian prisoners would be released in return for hostages that are being held still 7 months into this. And again, where is Hamas? They don't want it. And so I really wonder, when you look at what's really behind this, what is really the true motivation? And as you and others have said, who's really behind it? Because on a lot of these campuses, you look at the people that are protesting, they're very organized. You know, when they went into Columbia overnight and broke into the building, wasn't it interesting that there was already media, so-called student media, filming everything as they were breaking into the building? So, you know, it's important for people to get educated, to understand the history, the geography, you know, rather than just some of the candidly very ignorant statements that are being made, both here in our own market with some of our media, but elsewhere. At least be aware and know what's going on.
How frustrated are you that there's not even an inkling of a conversation by any of these protesters as it relates to releasing and freeing the hostages?
Oh, I'm terribly frustrated. Look, nobody wants to see, you know, the deaths of innocent people. And nobody wants to see famine and any other thing. So human relief, we all support that. The Jewish community is 100% behind that, okay? But let's go back 7 months to October 7. We're dealing with terrorists. We're dealing with a recognized terrorist organization who hides behind schools, mosques, hospitals, hides in tunnels. I mean, it's disgusting. I mean, the October 7 events are truthfully the worst events to the Jewish people since the Holocaust. I hope people have seen the videos, at least read. I mean, you're talking about atrocities, Newell, of rapes and beheadings and burnings that human beings would, honestly, outside of the Nazis, you would never think that humanity would ever bring us to that point, as well as the capture of several hundred hostages, of which, you know, more than 100 are still being held right now, 7 months into it. And it's just terrible, okay? It really is. And when you see these protests, look, people have the right to protest in America. That's our First Amendment right. But you don't have the right to disrupt. You don't have the right to break into campuses. And you certainly don't have the right, you know, to be shouting and showing hate speech, you know, kill the Jews, send them back to Poland, river to the sea. This is hate language, okay? This is anti-Semitism from, you know, candidly, the 1930s in Europe and Germany. So, again, I know we all want to balance the right to protest. That is our fundamental constitutional right, but there has to be limits on it. And I only hope that people, when they see these images, you know, get educated, understand who the true enemy is here, okay? We are dealing with a murderous thug mob, you know, terror group. And, you know, it's very funny to me. I will say one more thing. For some of the groups that are supporting these protests, you know, and have these signs, you know, Hezbollah signs or flags and Hamas signs, do they realize what they're really supporting? Is this what a youngster that's 19, 20, 21 year old, is this the group that they want to be supporting and in some cases putting their education at risk for? I mean, I think if they knew better, they wouldn't.
Well, first, let's just talk about women. I mean, in the Hamas world, how are they viewed?
Well, I think we know that. I mean, all you got to do is, first of all, who's Hamas supported by? Its lead sponsor is Iran. Is there a country worse in terms of treating its women than Iran? I don't think so. How about the LGBT community?
That's where I was going now. Let's go to LGBTQ. What happens there?
Yeah, I mean, do they not understand that, first of all, within the Middle East, the only country that openly supports LGBT rights, just like America does, is Israel, okay? And if you're LGBTQ and you go into an Arab country or if you go into the Gaza Strip, I assure you, you're not going to be treated the same way that you are in Israel or in America. So what are you standing up for? And again, that's what's most frustrating, I think, to me and many others, is you got to kind of look through this and understand this really isn't about, you know, pro-Palestinian rights. Okay, we all want this to end at some point. You know, if there's ever going to be a solution in the Middle East, I am optimistic with some of the new emerging Arab countries that I think can come on board. There is some optimism, but you can't have a terrorist organization in your backyard who calls for the destruction of the state. They don't want peace. They want chaos. They want war. It's in their charter. So I only hope that some of the Americans that are out on the streets that are protesting do it peacefully, number one. That's their right to do it. But also learn about some of the stuff behind all of this and really try to get a sense, is this really for Palestine or is this just against Israel, against Jewish people? And I, you know, I think a lot of it, unfortunately, is the latter.
You know, and you and I talked about this before, too, Arnie. The manner in which Hamas conducts their urban warfare. I was listening to someone day before yesterday, I guess it was over the weekend, they were talking about the differences in Ukraine versus what's going on in the Middle East. In Ukraine, a common Joe citizen is in the subway tunnels being secreted and protected from the enemy, the Russians. In Gaza, the citizens are not in the tunnels. Hamas is in the tunnels, protecting themselves from the enemy, their enemy, Israel. And they do so at the sacrifice of the general population who's sitting outside and is suffering all of the casualties. Now, in my mind, that speaks volumes about the humanitarian nature of the way that they want to conduct their urban warfare, which is one of the most difficult types of warfare that exists today. But they made that conscious decision. And it's just, to me, I am mystified by why we are placing the blame on Israel. These are choices that Hamas has made to sacrifice the general population, not Israel.
Well, two comments. First of all, again, I think it's really important for people to go back and remember October 7th. October 6th was a peaceful day, okay? This sure would never have happened. The world would never have been put into this crisis except for a terrorist group that wanted to kill and murder and behead and rape, okay? And any country in the world, in response to something like that against its own citizens, is going to take action. It is very difficult warfare for Israel. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You're dealing with a very condensed area, first of all, with the Gaza Strip. You're dealing with people that your enemies that are hiding, as you say, underground, okay, and hiding in these public places of hospitals and mosques and others. All right, it is extremely difficult for Israel to be able to respond to that. And yes, have there been, bad situations where people have lost life? Of course. But I will tell you, Israel is an ethical army. It is the only army, I think I include America into this, that gives warnings before they do things. They have cell phone numbers, text numbers. They drop leaflets. They're doing what they can do. And again, we all want this to end. I mean, nobody wants to see human suffering continue. But as I say, if people of good conscience truly want peace to come to this region, okay, you have to be able to eradicate a group that doesn't want that, that will work each and every hour towards making sure that there's chaos. That's why you're seeing, Newell, a lot of Arab countries very quiet. You don't see them with large public condemnations, okay, of Israel or the United States, because they know what this is about. They know the evil of Iran, and they want peace themselves and stability. So, again, that's why maybe
let's be honest. It's even worse than that. They don't want any Palestinians. That in and of itself speaks volumes.
Well, because
they understand the psyche of that population.
Right.
Many of those countries at one time had Palestinians, right? and it did not bode well. It did not bode well for the majority in a number of respective countries. And what happened? To hell with that. We're not doing this. We need to save ourselves from ourselves. We're not doing it. Right.
Well, I think a lot of the Arab countries are very concerned about the future of their own countries and the security of their own countries. Look, a country like Egypt, if people know the history
Let's do this, Arnie. Let's get to a break. Okay. We'll pick it up right there. We're visiting with Arnie Philko, former CEO of the Jewish Federation of Greater New Orleans. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Tensions are growing. Desires to create mayhem are increasing. One asks, who is actually in control? We're visiting with Arnie Philko, former CEO of the Jewish Federation of Greater New Orleans. Arnie, I taught at Tulane for a number of years. I know you've been close to the university. What's your expectation of what they should do at this point in time?
Well, I think hopefully today you're going to see some strong action by Tulane, as should have been the case at universities around the country. Again, the right to protest is a constitutional right. Nobody objects to that. But when you start trespassing, when you start using anti-hate or hate language, when you use anti-Semitic language, that's just not tolerable. It's not what our Constitution protects. And action needs to be taken by the universities to be able to confront that. So I'm hoping it doesn't get out of hand here in New Orleans. But I also believe that at some time the rule of law has to be put into play. And we will see if that is the case.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I made the observation that the leaders of universities, you would think that they would be better trained, maybe even more trained in leadership, credible leadership, crisis management. You run a university, you're running a city. You have all the ills of a city. You have all the upsides of a city. But when you have crisis, it takes a deliberative type of leadership to squelch whatever is happening out there. And I just see so many universities that they're just not doing it. I mean, they're setting arbitrary deadlines and then walk away from it like they're on Animal House double secret probation. That doesn't work.
Yeah. No, it absolutely doesn't work. I mean, you've got to live up to the statements you make, and you've got to enforce the laws and the policies of your campus. And, you know, no group of students should be subjected to, to being afraid to go to classes or to walk around campus or to have hate slogans thrown against them. I mean, that's not the American way. That's not what our university system stands for. So, look, I hope that I don't think it's going to die down. I think this is probably going to get worse before it gets better. But Newell, I have to tell you, my bigger concern right now is what's happening in the Middle East. I want those hostages released. It's shameful that they're still there. Our country needs to continue to move for that. And we need to stop this rise in anti-Semitism and this rise in hate towards other groups. It's not what this country stands for. It's very concerning. It should be very concerning to everybody. And this current situation is simply exacerbating it.
Yeah, I think when we start taking student visas away and stop importing haters, we have enough homegrown haters already. We don't need to import anymore, frankly.
That's very true. That's very true.
And I think we need to start doing our due diligence there and sending the message, no space for you here. We have enough. We don't need any more.
Yeah.
Arnie Philco, as always, truly always appreciate your time, your insight. Have a great week.
Thank you, Neil. Appreciate the time.
We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature, whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to or the succulents that adorn our homes. Nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently with offline maps and on-trail navigation. Download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.